Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
From far, how's that? From far within OSHA District 3, FEMA District 3. This is Safety Wars. How's everybody doing? And of course, EPA. Let's not forget about our friends over at the EPA. And we talk about environmental safety too. How's everybody doing out there tonight? Oh, yeah. What an exciting time to be alive. That's all I have to say. Yes, yes. Very exciting time to be alive. Let me make sure I'm on. Who knows? It's hard to tell sometimes whether I'm on. Hold on. Well, yeah, I guess so. I'm on safetyfm.com live. As I like to point out, Jay Allen and I are the only ones with live radio shows dedicated to safety, your safety, the national safety, and everything else. So, oh. We gotta go commercial break. We got something going on here. Hang on, everybody.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Pozo, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Pozo and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
Sorry about that, everybody. We had a situation come up. I hate it when that happens. I didn't have anything ready to go. But exciting times to be alive, I'll say that much. With Safety Wars, with the nation and everything else. We're working on some projects here. Now we're going to try to get Jay Allen on the program here. He's right now indisposed on a project up north. I'm not sure whether he publicized where he is or not, but he's up north. Hanging out with everybody. Hold on. All right. You know, we got all this wireless stuff here. I hate it. People say, well, Jim, why do you hate wireless stuff? Wireless stuff is so good. All right. Well, it's because you know, when you have multiple wireless things going on, it interferes with everything. But that's not what I'm here to talk about, is my woes. I'm here to talk about what matters and to the safety profession and everything else. So today is May Day, right? May 1st. And now there's always a lot of questions out there. I'm finding out, especially with the younger crowd, for lack of a better word, I can say that now, those young whippersnappers out there, with the younger crowd, how history is often lost. And the question comes up always, why is it important that we study history? One, to learn from it so we don't repeat the past. Ben Franklin was, and a lot of people, Lord Acton has always said, you know, those who is quoted as saying, those who do not learn from the past, repeat it. I believe it was Ben Franklin who said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme, right, with things. And to avoid. The other thing is this, Sun Tzu, right? Know thyself, know thine enemy, because yourself is the enemy. Or know thy enemy, know thyself. Heard it said both ways. So often, this program that we do, we revisit some of the historical things and explain what they are, where they go back from. That's, and no, I like to do some dives. That's what they are. And how is this related to safety? Is this a lot of the progressive movements from the late 1800s in this country eventually manifested themselves into OSHA, the Department of Labor, some other stuff. No, the labor movement in general. So that's one of the reasons why we revisit it. We don't know where we came from, possible where we're going, and how could we improve? How could we? We're always about improving things. But anyway, you know, sometimes we improve things for the better, or sometimes we improve things for the worse, at least initially. And so May Day, right? So we're going to, you know what? I might as well just go for it. And we haven't used this in a long time. Is, do I even have it anymore? All right, let's go. The Safety Wars exclusive here. Safety Wars, right? The history and legacy of May Day. So you're listening to us, the voice of the people, Vox Populi. That's what Safety Wars tries to be. We're always on the front line and in the fight for what's right. You know me, I'm Jim Polzel. And today we're doing a special report that dives a little bit into the history, the controversy, and the legacy of May Day, a day born from bonfires and blossoms, but hardened by blood, bombs, and the battle for labor rights. Most people hear May Day and think spring festivals, maples, and flower crowns. And that's all part of the truth. In ancient Europe, May 1st was all about fertility and seasonal renewal. Think like the Celtic festival Beltane or the Roman Floralia. Bonfires lit the sky and the earth was alive again. But cheerful spring celebration took a sharper edge in the 19th century. As workers across industrialized nations face brutal hours, dangerous conditions, and no real protections, enter the labor movement, and with it, the transformation of May Day into what we now call International Workers' Day. In 1886, U.S. labor unions organized a nationwide strike demanding an 8-hour workday. In Chicago, things turned deadly. That peaceful protest became the Haymarket Affair, and it changed everything. On May 4th, 1886, a crowd gathered at Haymarket Square in Chicago. Workers, anarchists, and union leaders were there to protest police violence from the day before. The rally was peaceful until someone, to this day still unknown, threw a bomb into a line of police officers. The explosion and the chaos that followed left 7 officers and at least 4 civilians dead. Police fired into the crowd. Panic erupted. In the aftermath, 8 labor activists were arrested, even though there was no evidence tying them to the bombing. 4 were hanged, 1 committed suicide, and 3 were later pardoned. That tragedy became a rallying cry. Just a few years later, the Second International, a global socialist group, declared May 1st as a day of honor, a day to honor those martyrs, and to stand united for workers' rights. Over the decades, communist and socialist countries like the Soviet Union, China, and Cuba embraced May Day with military parades and political speeches. That association made it controversial in the U.S., where fears of communism were high, and in my opinion, should have remained pretty high, right? The biggest threat that we have nowadays is the threat of worldwide communism, the resurgence of it. And so, in 1894, America created a separate safer holiday, Labor Day in September. But make no mistake, May Day didn't die. Today it's observed around the world by labor unions, workers, and activists who still demand dignity, safety, and fair pay. It's a day of memory and a day of action. This May Day, take a moment to remember the history. From pagan fires to factory floors, from Chicago streets to global rallies, to fight for workers' rights, and I'm going to say this, and for safety. It didn't end then. It's alive, and it's ours to win today. That safety war that we're always fighting, it's ours to win. We just got to make the choice to win or to lose. So, this is Jim Polzel from Safety Wars. Come back here, stay safe, stay informed, and stay in that fight. Safety Wars, you're lighting the night. And we're going to go into our regular program.
Come and listen to a story about a man named Jim. Safety's his game and the odds were looking grim. Workplace hazards everywhere, from ladders to machines. He took on the mission to make those places clean.
Safety, that is. PPE. OSHA rules.
Well, next thing you know, old Jim's in high demand. Teaching folks safety from the mines to the land.
Said we gotta keep them safe.
Make sure they know the score. About hazards and the dangers that they just can't ignore.
Training, that is.
Inspections.
Safety plan.
So now they call him up. Safety Wars is here to stay. Fighting the good fight, keeping dangers at bay. Tune in and learn with Jim. He's got the safety know-how. Cause Safety Wars is on and we're starting right now.
So I guess we'll call this the restart of the show. How's everybody doing there? We're listening to Falling. This is a royalty-free song. It's funny, after you deal with royalty-free music, you start to hear it on other venues, right? Other shows. But so, recently, Nevada kicked in. They had a heat stress program, right? The heat illness prevention requirements in their OSHA regulations in Nevada OSHA. Now, everything in from the federal government is on hold. I don't believe any action has come place, has come, no, has happened here with the Heat standard, right? It's, and I don't know how it is on hold, up for review. But that does not mean that OSHA does not have the National Emphasis Program on outdoor and indoor workplace heat-related hazards. Right, this program has been extended to April 8th, 2026. And employers should take this opportunity to review and update their workplace safety and heat illness prevention programs. Unfortunately, they're using the general duty clause for this. And essentially, the general duty clause, as everyone knows, even though OSHA was set up and everything was set up to everything has been set up, right? No, you can check out the labor laws and everything else and legal cases that OSHA is a preventative type of thing. You're supposed to prevent accidents and injuries. But often what happens, especially with the general duty clause violations, they it's an ex post facto. It's in response to an actual incident, injury, and everything else. So I'm going to share with you folks the share screen, and right here is the OSHA instruction, and this has been extended out to 2026, and this instruction describes policies and procedures for implementing a national emphasis program to protect employees from heat-related hazards and resulting injuries and illnesses in outdoor and indoor places. This national emphasis program expands on the agency's ongoing heat-related illness prevention initiative and campaign by setting forth a targeted enforcement component and reiterating its compliance assistance and outreach efforts. This approach is intended to encourage early interventions by employers to prevent illnesses and deaths among workers during high heat conditions, such as working outdoors in a local area experiencing a heat wave, as announced by the National Weather Service. Early interventions include, but are not limited to, implementing water, rest, shade, training, and acclimatization procedures for new and returning employees. We'll talk more about this later on. So that's from signing the old OSHA administrator, Douglas Parker. And you could go through here, right? This was related to Executive Order 14008. I'm wondering if that's one of the ones that Trump had rescinded back in January of this year. And this is how this goes through. And the instruction shall be offered for no more than 3 years from the effective date. Pardon me. Unless canceled or extended by a superseding directive. So this has been extended out there. And you can go and check this out. We won't go into detail. But the bottom line is this. Work, rest, shade. Not that hard, folks. Work, rest, shade. Now, if you're a worker, this is what I'm going to tell you. And I've worked in the majority of my career in mobile crews, like hazmat, emergency response, that sort of thing. And now we're doing, right now I'm working a cleanup in Region 3, I'll leave it at that, and a longer-term cleanup. And one of the things I tell people, especially if you're on an emergency response crew, whether you're a primary, a first responder, or a second responder. So your first responder, we know what those are, police, firefighters, EMTs, hazardous materials response agencies, like a lot of counties have. And, right, we know that. What are the second responders? It's people that get there after the first responders to help with the ongoing cleanup. Some would argue there's also a tertiary responder, a third level. Right? So you get a phone call, you show up in the field, and what do you do? I'm going to tell you this. You have approximately 3 to 4 hours, basically. It's critical if you're in charge, if you're a safety person, to go out and make sure that they have enough water, Gatorade, or no other sports drink. There's a lot of debate on that. Or, you know, appropriate ways to hydrate. Now, some of the larger cities and everything actually have cooling centers, mobile cooling centers, which is like a old school bus, or a new school bus for that matter, with air conditioning in it, so firefighters, emergency responders would cool off. But you need, what do we end up doing in the other areas, right? They may have a van, they may have a trailer, they may have a mobile home, but more commonly what you see are vehicles, right? To cool off in. And that's usually what ends up on my job, because there's never a budget for anything proper out there to treat people like human freaking beings. So there's a trailer. So there's no private cars or company vehicles with air conditioning on them. So if you haven't already, what do you need? You need water, right? Cool water, something like a no, they say never very cold water, because people have gotten sick of drinking ice cold water. Drink ice water. Well, guess what? There's a lot of people out there who cannot drink ice water. I'm one of them. Sensitive teeth. You put the ice water in, and then all of a sudden it's like getting a root canal. So water roughly 57 degrees Fahrenheit, like a stout. Or a dark beer, like 55, 57 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. You want to avoid alcohol, but you want to, obviously, but you want something about that. So they could go and drink that cool water. That's what I recommend. But do whatever makes the people feel comfortable, because they're miserable, because they're hot, and they got to stay hydrated. The advantage of using some type of electrolyte replacement, I mentioned a brand name before, but, you know, there's like thousands of them out there. The advantage of using those is that it encourages drinking. How's that? Right? So it encourages drinking more water and keeping you more hydrated. Now, what I'm told from medical professionals and from what I've read, water, your body can only absorb water and fluids at such at a certain level, right? And that level is something like 8 ounces every 20 minutes, which gives you the 24 ounces of an hour. But you can get into what is called a deficit, basically. So you may be drinking like a half a, you know, drinking all this water. That doesn't mean you're automatically hydrated, right? So what people often do is they go out and drink like one container of water to two parts. One container of the sports drink to two parts of water, whatever. But the point is that you got to drink. Way back in the day when I was doing a cleanup in the desert, right, was for a rocket fuel cleanup. What we ended up doing was we would drink a bottle of water, right? When we got up in the morning. Oops. We would drink a bottle of water when we got up in the morning. Then, on the way to work, the job site, we drink like another bottle of water. And then you go, when you get to work, you got to go to the bathroom. That's obvious. More on that in a minute. And then what happens is you go in about your day, and you're constantly drinking, 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 drinking. And if you're in PPE, personal protective equipment, once you get above like 70 degrees Fahrenheit, 65 degrees Fahrenheit, you better make sure you're hydrated. If you're a worker, bring your own stuff. Don't rely on your company, especially in the first day of a project, an ongoing cleanup, removal action, remedial action, whatever we're calling it. I tell you what, the safety people, they're often told at the last minute, may take a couple of days to get their crap together. Always bring your own water. Bring like 2 gallons of water, something to drink. That way, right, that way, you're able to manage that better yourself. Because I tell you what, a lot of these companies, this is the last thing on their mind. Oh, they got this going on. They got to get equipment. They got to get people. They got to get this. They have all this other stuff. They don't have their groove together. So bring your own. I'll even say this. When I've had office jobs out on these job projects, I always have a small cooler of water for me. Why? One is that I don't rely on anybody else there to give me water or anything else. But that's what it is. And with the more professional companies I've worked with, I mean, it's like the water is the first thing on the job. Let's get it. The first load of stuff coming to the job, we got water. But again, that's what you need to do. Now, what else is going on, right, with that? So now you're drinking. I mentioned the bathroom. So if your color of your pee matters. So if you're peeing, right, if it's clear, you're pretty good. Light yellow tinge, right? But but the thing is, let's remember, if you take vitamins, certain medications may change the color of your urine. But what happens is, it only happened to me one time, where you get so dehydrated you start peeing and it looks like brown. That means if it's dark, almost bordering on brown, then you have a problem. You have a heat-related emergency, and that's when you got to drink water. In my case, what did I do? We happened to have a shower on the job. Guess what? Jumped right in the shower, turned on the cold water, and started drinking a lot of water in the shower. Right? I had bottled water with me. I started drinking. Now, the ubiquitousness of bottled water has helped the situation out with hydration. Because it used to be, back in the day, they get the low man on the totem pole to do all of, or the safety professional, to do those darn water coolers. But guess what? I explained financially why it was cheaper to get individual bottles of water. And now they said, well, now we got to spend money. I said, they're $3 a case across the street. 5-gallon case. Really? Yeah, really. Did you price it out? Versus paying a man for 2 hours to mess around with water coolers. Then you got to worry about whether they're clean, whether somebody sabotaged them, and everything else on top of them. Not worth it, dude. Not worth it. Oh, I see what you mean. And how about we get the water coolers with the big 5-gallon jugs on top? Yeah, that would be even better. That might be really good that we do that, but now we have an issue of housekeeping with it. But we can manage that. That's a hell of a lot easier to manage. And plus, we're doing housekeeping anyway. And we also had on sites where people would just go around and collect the bottles and then turn them in for deposit. So you had some people out there with a cottage industry. That was one of my colleagues. I mean, we used to laugh together with him, right? He used to collect all the bottles and cans on the job. He'd go around in his little buggy, and that's what he used for spending money, right? And party would get himself, like, lunch once a week with all the bottles. But he was also the guy, and I think I shared this story before. He would go out with, he'd go out at the beginning of every project, and he wouldn't pack anything. He'd be flying somewhere. Didn't pack anything. He packed an overnight bag, basically. So he didn't have to pay for luggage. Didn't have to deal with luggage. Then what do you think happened? His first trip was either to some type of a thrift store or Walmart. He'd go in there and buy his entire wardrobe, everything. Then at the end of the that would be a write-off to the IRS. Then at the end of the project, what did he do with all that? He donated it. He got another write-off from the IRS. So it was pretty funny. And I said, dude, you have an office job. He said, yeah, but I got my write-off from the IRS. I said, well, I don't know there, dude. I don't think, that's like abuse in the system. I think you're going to have a problem. I would never do that. I'm telling the IRS, I would never do that. Right? Unless I had PPE or was like a real dirty job. And I've done that. I mean, there's uniform places all over the, all over the internet, right? And yes, when I've been on dirty, quote-unquote, dirty jobs, what have I done? I've gone out and I've gone to these places. I've gotten used uniforms, and it was a real dirty job, let's say a mercury cleanup or an asbestos cleanup or a lead cleanup, where I knew that I'd get the stuff on me. or a lot of stuff I wanted to, they didn't have a laundry service available on the project. I went out and bought like 10 shirts, 10 pairs of pants from the thrift store. I'm putting them on for the dress exclusion zone. And then at the end of the job or the end of the day, chuck them. I've done that already. Put them in with your disposed PPE. That's what I've done. But now, how do we get on this anyway? I don't know. Safety words. We go all over the place on tangents. But again, another way to mitigate heat stress. What kind of clothes are you wearing? What color is your hard hat? Are you out there in the desert with a black hard hat so your mind will bake? Right? Your mind will break then once it bakes. But anyway, or do you have a vented hard hat? What do you have? Or are you one of those guys that took like a hacksaw to the top of the hard hat shell to cut holes in it? Or like a spade drill right on it, right? I don't know. Make a holes, but all this stuff. Now, this is the other thing you got to watch out for, especially in the refining industry. The refining industry has a tendency of getting Nomex and other materials, right? And they want dark color. Why? I've asked multiple times. You're preaching heat stress and heat illness. What the hell are you doing getting dark navy blue Nomex? They make tan. They make lighter colors. They make this, they don't have to be thick and heavy, right? Like they don't have to be arc flash rated. You could get NFPA 2112 fire retardant clothing, and it's lighter. It's NFPA 2112. Well, we like the dark blue because the oil doesn't show up on it. Yeah, but you're giving people a freaking heat stroke. Explain that to me. Explain to me this. But we look good. Oh, well, yeah, you look good in the freaking coffin too, right? I'm sure you're going to look good in the coffin. That's what all I have to say. I went on a rant, right? I should have warned everybody on that. Now, the regular news. I'm going to go, let's go through this here. A lot of stuff going on. So here we have Cal OSHA, and this is another problem that we have with OSHA regulations and with OSHA in general. It's not their fault. I'm going to say that. Not their fault. Congress, and you can go back and look at the debate in Congress to get the Occupational Safety and Health Act ratified. To get it passed, there's a lot of debate. Do we assign criminal penalties to things? Other countries do. Generally speaking, anything in the Commonwealth, the UK, gets Canada and all the, I think it's 27 other countries, all of them, have criminal penalties. China, forget about it. They have the death penalty when they choose to use it here with this. But essentially, they don't have that. They can find in some states like New York and Arizona. I'm sorry, Santa Fe, New Mexico. New Mexico, the rust, right, situation. They do, right, convict people, but not so often, right? So three workers killed at San Leonardo company. Cal OSHA has no power to shut it down. This is from Fox. KTVU.com. It's a Fox affiliate out west. And this is from San Leandro, California. Three workers in the last 8 years have been killed at a family-owned metal scrap recycling business. And the San Leandro company has been fined more than 60 safety violations as far back as 1990s, possibly the worst safety record of any similar company in the past 10 years. But despite the deaths and injuries at the company, the state has no real power to shut it down. Inspectors with California's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or Cal OSHA, have done their part by citing and fining the company. I'm not mentioning the company, but the company has regularly been able to appeal the violations to pay a lesser amount, as is their right under state law. So you have a sort of a perfect storm of understaffing of cuts and refunding employees, is a quote, refunding employers, including irresponsible employers, like this one, said Garrett Brown, a former field inspector at Cal OSHA, who personally cited the company 17 times during his career and how it has made a hobby of being an unofficial watchdog. So this is what I'm, and they have videos and everything else. Now, I'm going to tell you this. Metal recycling companies, I have audited them with that, and I've done what it's been like. I walk in there, I see what's going on. Oh, you're that guy we hired from OSHA. No, I'm not from OSHA. I'm a private consultant. Oh, well, what do you think we're going to do here? What do you, what I think you're going to need to do is what's your safety plan? What's safety plan? You think we enforce this? We're walking over this. We're doing this. We got moving all over the place. And then you know what happens? I said, well, you know, have a nice day. I can't afford the liability here. And this has happened time and time again with metal recycling companies with them, the three that I've done audits on or attempted to. And you just say, you know what? Nice talking with you, and I'm heading on out. But basically, no, they have no authority, Cal OSHA. Now, this is the whole thing. Everybody, now, California has the reputation of being a very left-wing state. Certain communities are not. Now, my question is this, with all of this. If there's such a left-wing state, and the Democrats care so much about workers' safety right now, if they care so much about, why the hell don't they strengthen the Occupational Safety and Health Act in California and put in criminal penalties? Why not? Maybe you're being lied to that one political party is more in favor of worker health and safety than the other. How's that? You have, now, and I'm going to go to Wikipedia really quick. Let's throw it into AI here. What is the state assembly makeup of California in 2025? Democrats or Republicans? Let's see what this says. So, searching the web. The California Assembly has, is controlled by the Democratic Party, which holds a supermajority. Out of 80 total seats, Democrats occupy 60, Republicans occupy 19, and there is one vacancy. This supermajority allows Democrats to pass legislation requiring two-thirds vote, such as tax increases and constitutional amendments, without needing Republican support. The current Speaker of the Assembly is Robert Rivas, a Democrat, and the Majority Leader is Cecilia Aguilar Curry, both Democrats. The Minority Leader is Republican. So the Assembly, the Democrats have a supermajority, and in the Senate, Democrats have a supermajority, and they have a Democratic governor. So if they're so liberal, if they're so concerned with worker rights, they're so concerned with workers' safety, why the hell is there not a criminal thing here? It's the legislature's fault. This is my point. Now, here's the other question. Where are the Republicans on this? Where are the Republicans on this situation? I think that's a fair question, because I tell you what, if it were me, I'd be there saying, well, why don't we co-opt this from the Democrats? So my point is, both of them are at fault in the state of California. That's my thing. Both of them are at fault. That's why you got to watch out for yourself. And that, too, is part of the safety war. We're on a rant tonight. I think we're going to do an hour or two. We're just going to keep going again and again and again. All right.
We got that done. We got that done. How Nevada OSHA plans to enforce new heat regulations. We'll go back to that. New state regulations require Nevada employers to protect employer of workers from extreme heat went into a forceful effect on Tuesday, providing critical safeguards. And how are they going to do this? Under the new regulations, businesses must conduct a one-time analysis to determine if the majority of workers in certain categories face heat illness risks for more than 30 minutes of an hour. If so, employers must implement a written safety plan. Wow. So that's basically it under new regulations. So that's what they're going to do. So I think they're probably going to go like federal OSHA under targeted stuff. Now, today I got a whole bunch of credentials from the state that were issued in New York. That's the Region 2 OSHA outreach. Basically, where is it? It's in Rutgers University in Somerset. One of their many satellite campuses. The other one is in Buffalo. And there's another one, escapes me where the other outreach center is. And whenever I see something from New York, from the New York area, I double check to make sure it's a legitimate credential. Why? Well, I actually know, like in the beginning, the intro says, I'm not usually part of this story, right? I'm not usually part of the, but here we go. This is from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. Brooklyn man sentenced to 6 months in jail for making and selling fake OSHA and Buildings Department safety cards. Now, how am I part of this story? I actually went to one of my recertification classes for construction safety training with this guy. Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez, together with the New York City Department of Investigation Commissioner Joycelyn Stauber, announced that the owner of a Brooklyn company that is supposed to provide job site safety training and certification has been sentenced to 6 months in jail for making and selling dozens of fake safety cards to OSHA construction workers who never received the required training. So, going on, I won't mention his name, but, it's very easy to fall into this trap. I mean, there was one company. How do you know? Well, you look on the back of the car, there's a QR code. Scan that QR code if you're a safety professional and find out if that is right. That's one leading indicator, whether the card is issued correctly. The other thing is where you get these people that are like all confused. I mean, I've had this. And I've reported it also, where it was obvious. Since when? This is one of the typical ones. Since when is there a 6-foot fall protection rule in construction? So you're a 30-hour train, right? That's like 3 hours of fall protection training in there. Yeah? They didn't mention at any time that there was a 6-foot fall protection rule. They didn't say it. No. I said, well, the answer is since 1998, in case you're wondering. You can look that up. Oh, well, they don't enforce it. Well, then perhaps you need to go back to your former project, your former job site, and ask the safety professional and management why they were not enforcing federal law, why they were not complying with federal law. But here, we comply with federal law the best we can. It's like, really? Yeah, really. Now, since I had it in the title, and, you know, I'm going to do this on hour one, I'm going to do a share screen here, and we're going to continue with some of the other stuff here, OSHA news, EPA news. Yeah, we got to get to EPA news. This has been very controversial. It's so controversial, you try to Google it. I've tried to Google it from multiple computers and put it in different. That doesn't even come up. What am I talking about? Whitehouse.gov/wire. So this has been all over Drudge. And I get a call. I get a call, a text from someone. Jimmy, go on over to Drudge. Holy guvno. You wouldn't believe what's going on. And this is what I see. The president right? And in the bigger picture, right? Let's go back. VOA News, Voice of America News, is no more, basically. I think they have to pay the people, like the golden handcuffs sort of thing. They're still employed. But it doesn't really exist. VOA News, you know, it's still from, I believe it's March 15th on there. No, never been updated, something like that. And then the White House comes out, the White House wire. President Trump establishes a new Religious Liberty Commission. And if you look at this, I've argued for this for many, many, many years. Back before Safety Wars, we had the American Environmentalist newsletter that I had for several years. It was a website before social media where we went into environmental news and what we're talking about here, except we have posts, right? And I've always argued you need something simple. You can't, you know, you go on these news websites. Yeah, they look beautiful. They got this going. They got this going. They got this going. What you need is a simple website like Drudge. That's what someone should put together. I said that for years. Well, there's been other things, but now President went and did it. I don't take any credit for that. But, you know, very simple. And what this does is, and I'm not going to click on any of this, it is a pro-White House website, from what it looks like, it's only been around for one day, and it is links to other websites. I believe they call this a meta website, right, that collects other links for other websites. And you can go in here, and here we have Trump, private sector investor nearing $8 trillion since I took office. And this takes you over to Breitbart, right? That's one of the more right-leaning places there. By the way, just for full complete disclosure, I saw Breitbart, right, before he passed away under suspicious circumstances, Andrew Breitbart, at his last real big public appearance. I got to talk with him for about 30 seconds here. And a lot of what we do is what Breitbart did here on Safety Wars, which is get into your face a little bit. Talk about the uncomfortable things in the safety field. That's what we do here. So this is it. I mean, you can't even find this on Google. They won't direct it to you. So it's almost like a shadow ban of some sort at this point. And here you have, right, J.D. Vance speaks at a Nucor steel plant in South Carolina. Right, this is right off a YouTube link. And the administration has been using social media primarily to spread their message. And this is another example of something very similar to that. Now, you can say, well, this is horrible. This is terrible. This is shocking. Jim, you shouldn't be covering this. You go back and all the press releases that I discussed before when Joe Biden was in there, and virtually every press release that was issued by the president was, this was paid for by, the big one was the American Infrastructure Funds, right, Act. Here, I have a picture of a sign right here. Hold on. Here, I'll get the exact verbiage. Here, hold on. Hold on, everybody. Here, what was the verbiage? Right, so this actually happened at a lot of the jobs, hold on, that I've been on. Here it is. Okay. This project was funded by President Joe Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law. How many times have we seen that? Right? How many times have we seen that out there? Right? On every one of those press releases. So the administration, doesn't matter what it is, uses the apparatchik of the government, whatever they're in charge of, to promote themselves. The only difference here is that Donald Trump is being overt about it. Everybody else is being pretty covert about it. That's one of the reasons the excuses for VOA News was shut down was because it was they printed some stories or had produced some stories that were anti-Trump, right? And for whatever, that's what the story is. But as I will point out, I can point out the press releases from all these agencies going back from time immemorial, that where they were promoting the administration's agenda. So the fact that Trump is doing it overtly versus the other ones, like in the the way down low, right? Really, no difference to me, because if you're paying attention, this is what it is. The other, this is no big surprise, and with this, I'm not one bit surprised. So that this happened, I'm not shocked, and I really do. I have a problem with it. And that is, I really not really. I mean, I expected this. Now, what's right? And there's a little bit of history to this. Up until, and I forget the name of the law, I think it was DARPA, right? Up until the 2012, 2013, it was against the law for you to even access any of these. VOA is one of them. That was meant for foreign consumption, VOA. And it was against the law for the government to propagandize the American public. Once that law went by the wayside, guess what? The floodgates opened. Then we find out all along, we've been being manipulated all along. All through the 90s, and if you recall, the anti-smoking campaign was kicked off at Woodbridge High School in Woodbridge, New Jersey. I would have to look at the exact date. It was when Clinton was in. The principal lived right down the block from me, Bell, Principal Bell, and his daughter was predominantly featured on the News Tribune in those days, where Clinton was up the block promoting the anti-smoking campaign. This is about 93, 94, 95, in that range. Then it finds out that the government was paying Hollywood to put anti-smoking messages into the programs. This has been happening for a long time. Again, I'm sure if we looked not that hard, we'd find this stuff. So the government putting things into the news and into culture, not exactly a new story here. It may be shock. People may be shocked, but I'm not really shocked. Now, I had mentioned this before here. So there was some more news here. So we covered extensively, and as pointed out as from Coast to Coast host, Ian Punnett, rest in peace, Ian. We're like one of the only shows to talk about the Rust accidental death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. And right in depth, we went through the whole accident investigation and everything here on air. Couple of times. Well, the movie was finally released. And here we have one of the reviews is from the Daily Beast, story by Nick Shager. I plan on seeing the movie because they piqued my interest here. Rust will forever be defined by the tragic 2021 accidental death of its cinematographer, Helena Hutchins, and questions about the prudence of completing the feature are only exacerbated by the finished product. Writer-director Joel Souza's run-of-the-mill Western is far less gripping than real-life drama that played out on the nightly news and Safety Wars. I added that one. Regarding star producer Alec Baldwin alleged responsibility for the fatal mishap, charges which were ultimately dropped and dismissed, rehashing cliches with formal polish but little novelty, this odor is a dour affair. This odor is a dour affair. I don't even know what the hell odor is. This odor is a dour affair made all the grimmer by the fact that there isn't a second of its 139 minutes that isn't colored in some way by the on-set shooting that made it notable and notorious in the first place. It's impossible to watch Rust, which is in theaters on and on video on demand, VOD, May 2nd, and avoid thinking about Hutchins' unnecessary demise, for which armorer Handiker Terrence Reed was convicted and her boss, right, plea bargained, and not helping matters is that its action repeatedly, even unintentionally, invokes it. Well, there's the talk about a cursed firearm that begets misfortune and misery, or Baldwin's protagonist's musing. Some things in this life you can't get back, I reckon, echoes abound. And it goes on and on and on and on here. Okay, let me explain something, right? My wife's cousin, I have the interview. I've got to put it up there. It's too painful not to. The great John Hugh McKnight. When we talked about this, the Rush shooting, right, because he was a noted stuntman in Hollywood for many years. If you're familiar, if you ever saw the movie with Speed with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock when they jumped the bus, that was him. He was the coordinator on that. So funding just doesn't appear out of thin air on any of these projects. Somebody has to sign for the funding. Somebody has to get the funding. Someone has to go through all the things that you need to do to get the funding done, right? Right. That's common sense. You want a movie? Costs millions of dollars. You got to get funding. You don't complete the meeting, project. You don't complete it. You got a problem. You got a major freaking problem because somebody's going to have to pay back that money. The bank wants their money back. Even if you don't go through a bank, somebody who's financing that wants their money back. And the legal argument could be they got the money under false pretenses. So who's the person out there who thought that they would not complete the movie? Pardon me. You don't think that they weren't going to get their money back? Really? Are we that stupid out there? You never bought anything? And this is, I'm not picking on the author here on this article. This is on everywhere. I can't believe that he made the movie. I can't believe that he finished the movie. I can't believe blah, 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 blah. What I find noted is that, according to what I've read, they packed up all their crap out of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and moved it like up north to Montana where there is no state OSHA. Right? Because then they can't really, you know. Well, what are you going to do? You're out of their jurisdiction. There are no repeat. Kind of hard to get a repeat thing when it's not in the state there, you know? A repeat violation. I'll check it out. I'll see, you know, what this is. Something else here, right? There's some other Alec Baldwin news. I mean, gossip and everything else. They're promoting Hilaria. I believe that's how you pronounce it. If I'm not pronouncing it correctly, I apologize. Hilaria Baldwin coming out with an autobiography with this. It might be a good read for those people who like those things. Here we have an article from Newsweek. Published today. What happens when teachers are replaced with AI? This school is finding out. And this is from Brownsville, Texas, just across the border with Mexico. Looks like any other elementary middle school in that chaotic period before the morning bell. Groups of tousled boys and girls trickle, saunter, and dawdle into a nondescript building where they will spend the next few hours in theory learning. In theory learning. Right, these kids, though, seem more jubilant than might be expected for a Tuesday morning in April. The days of dodging class or suffering from a lack of motivation appear to be a thing of the past at Alpha School, a private pre-K through 8th grade institution that utilizes personalized artificial intelligence to teach the entire day of the core. I tell you what, bad idea. Bad, bad, bad idea, the way this is going on. AI is not a person. Right? AI is not a person. All right, so Some war news. Here's what's in Trump's Ukraine minerals deal and how it affects the war. This is an article by Ivanka Katasuvka and Victoria Butenko from CNN. Looks, and then they got a picture. I can't share the screen because, you know, I'm not licensed to do that, but the picture that they have looks like some of that out of Gold Rush here, you know, a Discovery series. Ukraine managed to wrangle some more favorable terms out of the U.S. Before signing the long-awaited minerals deal on Wednesday. The agreement on natural resources was struck late on Wednesday after weeks of tense bargaining that at times turned sour and temporarily halted Washington's aid to Ukraine. Kyiv eventually convinced U.S. President Donald Trump to drop some of his key demands, but failed to make American security guarantees part of the agreement. Well, what the idea is this. You have American contractors over there, American countries. Russia's not going to F around. We'll see. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that now America was thinking that America has to supply some security over there. We'll see. Washington initially demanded a $500 billion share of the company Ukraine's rare earths and other minerals in exchange for the aid it had already provided to Kyiv. And then when Zelensky rejected the idea, Trump called him a dictator. Instead, the agreement that was inked on Wednesday says the future American military assistance in Ukraine will count as part of the U.S. part of the U.S. investment into a joint reconstruction investment fund that will be used to pour money into Ukraine's natural resources. Crucially, the deal does not call for Kyiv to reimburse the U.S. for aid it's already received. I think that's a mistake, but, you know. Again, now, we'll see how this works out. So, we're not going to talk about that. All right, we're going to have two stories here. You know what? Let's hold off on those till tomorrow's program here with everything here. So that's what I got tonight for Safety Wars. For Safety Wars, it's Jim Polzel. I look forward to seeing you or hearing from you or doing something with you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.